Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Agnostic Salvation Hour. This is Marshall.
I'm Cole.
I'm Jennifer.
And this is Howard.
And yeah, like I said, welcome to another show. I wanted to start off this show with something that's going on in my family. I think my in-laws have finally realized that I'm an infidel. And now I'm getting regular emails from my wife's favorite aunt. Basically, these third grade level apologetic type of things. Basically, they're all centered around, as far as I can tell, she thinks that the only reason I don't believe in God is because I'm angry at God.
Oh.
So she keeps sending me these things. Basically, the moral of the story is, I know things are bad, but without God, they'd be so much worse. And so I think they're on to me.
That always seemed like a faulty line of reasoning to me, really. I mean, you know.
It's unfalsifiable, for one thing.
Well, sure. No, I mean, like, you know, I'm missing my left leg, but, you know, you could be missing your right leg, and it would be so much worse. I mean, doesn't the whole thing kind of break down at that point where you're like, whenever you're starting to talk about, like, how much worse it could get from the current worseness that's going on, I don't really understand. Like, why can't we just recognize the problem before us?
I think it's a veiled threat, to be honest with you.
Well, actually, for me, I kind of look at it and I go, what makes you think I think that I'm pessimistic and that I think everything's gone to hell and you know, that I'm just doom and gloom?
Her mindset is, what else could it be?
Well,
why are they thinking that, though?
Right. I mean, it's like...
Are you doom and gloom?
not any more than I was when I was a Christian.
Are you still buying too many pistols?
Yes, <it's> my,
I don't know. I guess that's my thing. Is I would just answer back, you're making a huge assumption here. I'm not angry. I'm a happy person.
And I've been accused of the same thing. So that you're angry with God. Well, how's that possible? There isn't a God.
Yeah.
You know? Or they'll say, oh, you're a Jesus hater. I've been accused of that. I don't hate Jesus.
Well, listen to the last thing she sent me. This was, I describe it as childish. She, I think, would describe it as profound. But it was about these two angels that were...
Isn't that always the difference?
Is this the angel joke?
No, this is actually what she sent me. This isn't a joke. These two angels were traveling around. They went stopped off a couple places. One place they went to is this residence of this really poor family that they were farmers. And while they were there, one angel killed their only dairy cow. And as they're leaving, the... other angel was like, why did you do that? They were so nice to us. And he said, the angel of death had arrived and was going to kill the mother. I redirected that angel to the cow.
Oh, no.
I swear that's what it said. Just let you know, when things seem bad, they could have been much worse.
instead of killing the mother, it kills the cow, so the whole family starves to death?
Or you know, if he had the power to, if he had any control over the angel of death, then why didn't he say, hey, why don't you go to that house over there? Leave these people alone.
And where did the angel of death come from? Who created it?
I don't know. Yeah. He just wandered around killing people. He's like the guy on the Family Guy, the death.
You
know, he can be convinced.
I love that guy.
Peter Griffin can. They apparently had the same effect on him that Peter Griffin has on him. But anyway.
So how's your wife feel about this?
She thinks it's silly. I don't even talk. Because she doesn't send him to her.
Right.
I mean, she's really, really upset that I'm clearly going to hell. I know she believes that because she and I have had that conversation. Even when she still thought I was a Catholic. And she probably thinks I'm dragging her favorite niece along with me, which...
you are.
Now, this is your mother-in-law?
No, this is my... I don't know what the term is. The aunt-in-law.
Yeah. I think you just call those aunts.
Yeah, aunts. Just aunts.
Auntie.
Well, anyway, she is fearful for the fate of my soul, and which I can appreciate the sentiment, but I wish she would... at least have a little bit more respect for my intelligence and send me something that doesn't involve, you know, angels of death and happy angels and stuff like that.
Oh, that's a good one.
I don't know. Maybe that's a segue in.
All right. Well, yeah, it kind of is a segue into one of the biggest news items circulating around the atheist community right now is the fact that a recent Pew Center survey has revealed something that I think most of us already know, that atheists, agnostics, and agnostics know way more about religion than religious people do.
At least Christians.
I was going to say at least Christians, because I think
Jews are right behind us. Buddhists and Mormons.
Jewish and Mormons.
Yeah. I thought we came in.
Jewish came out ahead by like one point.
Sorry, all you Jewish people out there. I didn't mean to say Buddhists. My mistake.
The Jewish people came ahead of the Mormons.
Yes, Jewish people came ahead of the Mormons.
We came first, and then, or the, you know, atheists, agnostics, then Jews. No, Jews came first.
Jews came in first place.
Really? Well, we'll have
in
to.
Knowing religion by a point, because I went on the website and was looking.
And I've got a couple of things that says the other way around. Okay, so we're,
I thought
so,
it said
so,
first.
Well, no.
Either way.
What we'll have to do is find out what it is, because what I have shows the opposite. So, yeah, we'll have to. They came in a close second, you know, on a couple other sites, so I'll have to check that out.
And
that
sadly, the thing I brought, I didn't print out the entire thing, apparently, and it doesn't say it doesn't give any indication. But regardless, atheists and agnostics came out.
I mean, there wasn't much difference between the three of us, with the Mormons and the Jews and us. It was just really close. It fell when it gets to the Christians.
Well, you know, and this actually this kind of coincides with some other surveys done. A survey we talked about a couple of months ago regarding knowledge of religion or religious upbringing and the likelihood of dropping out of faith, of your faith, where the survey was done by like the Family Research Center or something like that, and indicated that the more you know about your faith, the more likely you are to leave it in the future.
What I found interesting was, you know, they said the reason why some of this, you know, atheists, agnostics were ahead was because to leave the faith, you had to know more about it, so you read the Bible more. But mm-hmm. I liked what Jennifer wrote, what, you know, when we were all debating on our groups and stuff, because I'm with you. You know, it was the other way around with me. I left the church because it just seemed silly and it was boring, and it wasn't until years later that I started studying the Bible.
Yeah, because some people were – somebody called had written in saying that this is a biased study because, of course, atheists know more than religion because they wouldn't be atheists if they didn't know, basically. And I was like, well, number one, how is that a bias? That's not a bias.
Yeah. Right.
And my second thing was is like I believe the survey actually said the biggest indicator of whether or not you were going to do well on the survey was how much education you had for the most part. And I was like – I took that to mean that the Christians that did well were probably – pretty well educated, because Martin Luther, I learned about him in high school. I didn't learn about him through, you know, studying religion. So mm-hmm. I knew who he was through high school history, not, you know, so I'm like, so this is also kind of a basic knowledge thing. And yeah, when it comes to like being an atheist, of like, I didn't become an atheist because I read the Bible. I became an atheist because I just studied history and science and other things and came to my own conclusions. And then later on, I learned about religions.
Right. But I think, you know, just real quick, I just think there's many reasons why we know more about the Bible.
Yeah, but I do think it is true that there are a lot of people who delve into some of those passages in the Old Testament that normally they don't read in church about the genocide and the infanticide.
Right.
And that's pretty shocking to a lot of Christians. I know it was to me the first time I read it, read those things. And it's kind of like being passionately in love with your wife or your husband, and then finding out, oh, he's a serial killer. You know, he murders babies. I might have to reevaluate this relationship. And I think that does actually happen a lot, because I've spoken mm-hmm. to people who have just been stunned by the stuff that they never read until they got curious and said, oh, I'm going to read this whole damn thing.
You know what's really funny is growing up for myself, those were my favorite parts of the Bible.
Why does that not surprise me?
There were the parts that I read, like, you know, while church was going on, I'd read the Bible and I'd read, you know, Judges, First and Second Kings and Chronicles and stuff like that, because I love the wars and the battles and the general backstabbing intrigue that was contained in those areas of the Bible. So I always thought it was really funny when other people didn't know them, because I was like, those are like my favorite parts. Like, I didn't like the New Testament because I thought the New Testament was kind of boring, all that theology and love and whatnot. I mean, I wanted...
turning the other cheek.
Yeah, I wanted more David and Bathsheba and Eglon and Ehud. I mean, I wanted those guys. That's good stuff right there.
Yeah, you just don't... they don't make action heroes who turn the other cheek.
Exactly.
You know, nobody's going to watch that movie.
Right.
I mean, the only way you can get a person to watch a movie about Jesus is you have to brutally torture him for 2 hours.
like Mel Gibson did.
Yeah. People aren't going to watch that shit otherwise, you know?
Yeah, got to have a lot of blood.
Oh, there's no blood. There's no one getting beaten up.
But that's right. A perfect example. It's like you have a story there that's full of intrigue, betrayal, everything else. I mean, regardless, you know, aside from the torture, I'm just saying that that is at least... Regardless of the fact that we've all in America heard that story over and over again ad nauseum, but it's still a captivating story because it captures the rise and fall of a story. If you get my meaning, I mean you've got know your build up, your betrayal, your all that kind of stuff.
Go ahead.
Whereas you know, retelling Hebrews in movie form, you know, I mean. No.
Well, you know, one thing that this survey does is eliminates the Christian favorite debate where they say, you know, if you just knew more about Jesus, you would believe him. And it's like, okay, listen, we know more than you do. We've actually read your Bible and not interested.
Have you seen any of the interviews with some of this survey afterwards? They'd sit outside a Catholic church and asked this one guy, he's probably 60, 65, come out in a nice suit. And he says, sir, can you tell me the first book of the Bible? He says, no. He goes, sir, you just came out of Mass. You don't know your first book?
That doesn't surprise me, though. Catholics don't encourage the parishioners to read the Bible, right?
Parts of them do now, but they used to, especially his age. Right. You know, that age group, you know, people that are 45 and up, during that period of time when they were in school, they were encouraged not to read.
Right. But survey after survey has shown that at least American Christians have no idea what they believe. Right. I remember one survey, I can't remember what exactly it was, but it was something like only 35% of Christians in the United States knew what Easter was about.
Right.
Why they celebrated Easter.
That's true.
You know, the same thing. No idea.
Well, and a lot of them couldn't name the four Gospels. What I was going to bring up, there was a 15 question quiz that people could take, and there was also a 10-question quiz. I took both of them. But the survey was 32 questions, and so I'm trying to find it for a group meetup. And so far I've got about 7 more. I'm hopefully in a week or two things loosen up and you're able to find more. I can get the actual 32-question survey. Right now I can't find it.
Yeah, I was 15 out of 15.
And I would imagine most of us were. I can't remember how that worked. It seems like the people that are in our groups and people I know here that we're doing seem to be rating higher than the average of the atheists.
Hmm.
You know, well, and I'm sure that it is in a lot of different areas, but as the average, we seem to be above that.
I think a more interesting twist in the survey would be, do atheists have a higher knowledge of religion in general?
Probably, yes. Yeah.
Than most other people.
And that's talked about too. I've collected a lot of data about this, about the curves and who voted on this and Hispanic Catholics and different kinds of Christians. I got a lot of information on it, and that's talked about in it, and that we definitely know more about. But although, you know, the Jews and Mormons know more, they're like us. They know about other religions a lot too.
I was going to say, because that's the thing. I think if you started – if you asked questions that weren't about Christianity, then you'd probably see it skew, you know, even more with the – I think a lot of atheists would do poorly too, because I do think that a lot of atheists know Christianity because it's – well, it's least here in the United States because it's what we're surrounded by. It's what, you know
– it's what we left.
Right? Yeah. You know, most people, that's what they were leaving if they were leaving a religion. So, you know, it would be interesting to see who knows what about – you know, Hinduism and Buddhism.
Right, and that's low
in
a lot of it.
Yeah, I would say it'd be similar if you were in an Islamic country that, you know, an atheist there would probably know the most about Islam, obviously.
There was a few things I found on YouTube with preachers and pastors commenting on this, and all of them agreeing. That we know more, agreeing that, it's a problem. We need to. I haven't heard on Bot Radio yet. I've been listening. But it'll be there. It takes a week or two sometimes when these things are out to get rolling into their program. And it will. You know, Hank Hanegraaff, several of them, they'll be on it. And they say the same thing. Hank Hanegraaff's pretty honest about things like this, these kind of surveys. And he almost always agrees, yes, it's a problem. You know, we don't, you know, most Protestants don't know enough about
it. Well, and again, that goes back to that one survey we talked about earlier where the Protestants who do know a whole bunch about their faith end up leaving.
That's
the problem. If anything, they should, you know, take some emphasis off of education about their faith and more on football or something that will just numb their minds so they don't really give a damn. So.
Well, I think I mentioned that too, that I think that the survey was also a symptom of a bigger problem, which is I think people in general just don't think about much of anything, especially when it comes to what you believe. People just kind of follow what they're told when they're grown up and they don't really care to look into it. And they just
– because,
I mean, you know, I think I believe it said like 4% of the people questioned, because they asked some general knowledge question, 4% of them thought Moby Dick was written by Stephen King.
I mean, yes. That's amazing.
You know, it's just like, oh,
that's too funny. Well, Stephen King.
And other surveys have been done that indicate that when questions Christians are more likely to believe that certain made-up passages that confirm their personal biases,
sure,
like against homosexuality or for homosexuality or whatever, they tend to believe those things are in there when in fact they weren't, at a higher rate than the general population. There have been a couple of studies that indicate that among everybody, but probably more likely among religious people, confirmation bias is huge. And it's just very easy to believe. I mean, if you show a right-wing, anti-gay Christian a list of quotes from Jesus and you throw in some anti-gay quotes in there, they're very likely to believe that Jesus said those things, even though in reality, according to the Gospels, he didn't say – he didn't even discuss homosexuality.
All righty.
Let's move on to the next topic. Howard, are you sitting down?
Oh, no.
Oh, Howard, stand up. Stand up.
No,
so we can
sit down, Howard. I have got some shocking news for you people.
Somehow I believe it's going to be the opposite of that with that amount of sarcasm. But go on.
FBI sting nets perverted pastor.
Oh, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
Really?
Never
heard of
it. I don't believe it personally.
Wake me up when some news comes on.
You know, and actually that's a good point. This is another story about religious leaders being grossly sexually immoral or just immoral in general. And
well, it depends on what kind of sex.
Well, this is true. I mean, yeah.
But it isn't news anymore. In fact, I think it really, even though we're talking about it now, it stopped being news quite some time ago. I mean, nobody is shocked to hear this stuff anymore. Outside of maybe
anymore.
The people of that individual parish. But anyway, an FBI sting has netted, and I got this from thesmokinggun.com, for those of you who are interested. An undercover FBI sting has netted a Lutheran church pastor who sought to arrange a Red Roof Inn liaison with an 11-year-old girl who he was planning to offer sexual training.
Oh, God.
Which the story goes on to demonstrate that you really do not need to be a genius to be a minister in the Lutheran church. Apparently, this pastor, William Bendert, or otherwise known as Pastor Bill, had thought he was talking to the 38-year-old single mother of an 11-year-old girl named Jenna. And, of course, like any good mother, she was looking for someone who would teach her daughter how to pleasure a man's penis, perform oral sex, and learn about her own body.
Oh, my gosh.
Normal mother stuff.
Unbelievable.
And Pastor Bill obviously agreed to assist with that, and he's going to jail as a result.
And why is he going to jail?
Because
he actually traveled out of state to meet these people and
underage.
God didn't tell him to do this or guide him.
Was it under like he traveled out of state in order to have sex with a minor?
Right.
Yeah, that's a felony.
Yeah.
I know why. I was just being
well.
And the Red Roof Inn. Come on, he couldn't afford better digs than that. You know.
Well,
yeah, you don't want to give her the wrong impression the first time around.
Yeah. Right.
Is it always going to be like this?
Well, not.
So, yeah, it's just amazing to me. And the funny thing is the FBI says that there were two other times he was the focus of a investigation, and on those occasions he backed out because he was afraid that he was being investigated. Yet, a mother trying to find somebody
that
to
didn't
teach
raise his red
like,
flags anywhere, going,
wait
a minute,
something's not right about this. That didn't seem unusual to him, apparently. So, again, like I said, you don't have to be a genius to be a...
No.
And actually, we've got some more stories.
I've actually got a story.
Oh, okay.
That I would like to contribute.
Absolutely.
It's an article written by Robert Frisk. He's a reporter. Journalist, I guess. Sorry. Reporters mm-hmm. like, you know, Trisha Takanawa or whatever. Anyway, Family Guy joke.
Yes.
Anyway, he wrote an article recently on The Independent, which I guess is a British publication.
Yes.
Newspaper, yeah. Et cetera. About honor killings. And it's a really good article. Everybody should go read it. If you did I'm looking at the title. The Crime Wave That Shames the World is the actual title of the article. It's kind of nothing new. I mean, we've discussed honor killings before, mm-hmm. Which are a common practice in the Muslim community. The killing of female family members that
shame the family.
That shame the family, basically. You know, like if you go on a walk with
a boy,
your friend's boyfriend. Yeah. Unchaperoned or something.
Oh, you don't even have to hold hands.
No,
just talking.
Just be there.
He brings up a very interesting, some very interesting points in the article that I think are important for, if anything, the atheist agnostic community to focus on and to kind of have in your back pocket when you're discussing the ills of religion, if you will. Basically, I'll just read this part of the article and it'll kind of say what I need to say. A 10-month investigation by The Independent in Jordan, Pakistan, Egypt, Gaza, and the West Bank has unearthed terrifying details of murder most foul. Men are also killed for honor, and despite its identification by journalists as largely Muslim practice, Christian and Hindu communities have stooped to the same crimes. Indeed, the honor of families, communities, and tribes transcends religion and human mercy. But voluntary women's groups, human rights organizations, Amnesty International, and New Archives suggest that the slaughter of the innocent for dishonoring their families is increasing by the year. Mm. Apparently, we're up to 20,000 now.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
I just thought it was interesting because he brings up in the article how it's not unique to Muslim communities, but takes place in many other types of communities as well. It seems to be attributed to more like tribal lines than religious lines.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. It's more rural, isn't it?
In some ways, but yeah. For instance, like Egypt in the article, apparently Egypt untruthfully claims that they have no honor killings in their country, which is completely false.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It would have to be.
Yeah. It's a really great article. It's just more... it's more of what we've talked about before in reference to this.
What we've come to expect, actually.
Yeah, yeah. I think the unexpected thing to me in the article was that even though I had heard hints of that in the past of Christian communities and other things like that, and, I hope it's in countries other than the U.S., but, I mean, what the hell? Maybe not. But, I that was surprising to me. Because I always had the impression it was a largely Muslim practice, and apparently not.
Well, it just shows the common trend that when religion gets ugly, it's almost always children that are bearing the brunt of that.
Yeah, it gets
children and women. But obviously, men are being killed too. Obviously, sure. For the same sure. things, but yep. You know. Maybe not the same things, but
I would say it's in most of the cases that I heard of, and I think that were put out in the article. Usually, it's like the man gets whipped or beaten or whatever, and then the woman gets stoned to death.
Right.
And
that right. So yeah, don't even get me started about how unfair right. that is.
Well, yeah, there have been a lot of situations.
As a man, personally, it's fine with me. But I just want to, give a shout out to all those females out there.
There have been a lot of situations where people have been accused. Of adultery, and the woman gets killed, and the man gets off with a beating.
Which, all I have to say is, even though it's not in all Bibles, but the whole entire story of the woman who was brought to Jesus and was going to be stoned, and he said, whoever's without sin, cast the first stone, blah, 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 blah. Which was obviously a later story added to the New Testament, much after its initial writing. But, it's important to glean the important fact from that story.
It's a beautiful story.
Which is there wasn't a fucking guy there. People. So how can she be guilty when the other party implicit in the crime is not there?
Does it make any sense?
You know, and the best description of that story, because I'm like, the story goes, you know, Jesus like leaned down and wrote something in the dirt, and then like everybody just kind of walked away. And the best definition of what that action was that he was doing that I always thought was like pretty good is I heard it was like he leaned down and just started writing people's names that had sex with the woman.
Oh, nice.
And everybody just kind of like went, I got something to do.
I saw a cartoon based on that gospel passage and where Jesus says, ye without sin may cast the first stone.
How about it ran?
And then you see the stone come in and hit her in the head and kill her. And Jesus stands up and goes, Mom!
Nice. Nice.
Hey, have any of you...
Mary was born.
And I don't...
Turn your cell phone off.
I don't want you necessarily go and watch this, but on YouTube, I stumbled across by accident a couple of years ago, stoning. Have you ever seen that?
Yeah, I have.
Oh, man. I watched a couple of them. It was numbing. It was like...
No, it's
unbelievable how they do that.
It's...
bury you halfway down to the ground with a sheet over you, then start pitching stones, and you slowly start bleeding. You're not dead. You're back and forth. You're not... It's horrible.
You know, in Islam, I was just watching something about this. They bury women up to their neck, and they bury men up to their elbows.
Well,
and
this one...
And if you... somehow are able to escape, get out and actually escape from the circle that they draw around the stoning area,
right?
you're allowed to live. You're pardoned. Which
so they give the women the man, no chance clearly, at all.
Yeah, the woman, I don't think most men get out of it either.
Well, the one I saw, women were buried like the same way as the men. They were buried up to their like elbows.
It's like a really nasty game of smear the queer. I mean, I'm joking. Good God.
All right. Okay. More pastor-related coerced sex. I wasn't sure I wanted to discuss the tale of Bishop Long since it's every accusation is being disputed by the bishop.
Is this the guy that like got caught? Like,
yeah, this is
the boys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the new birth missionary Baptist Church.
Yeah, where he was dressed up, sending pictures of him dressed in leotards. Yeah. Or not leotards.
Did you hear what he was? What his group is called? I mean, his name is Dr. Bishop Eddie Long, and he's the head of the Longfellows. That's the name of the group.
Isn't it like the new birth?
I mean, I don't know whether this is wishful Baptist thinking or bragging, the Longfellows. I mean, and he's against homosexuality.
Yeah, he's adamantly opposed to homosexuality, which is actually pretty predominant among African American churches in the United States.
Which you know, it's always the most vehement that that somehow get caught with their their freaking sausage in the drawer, you know? I mean, what the fuck, man?
This guy's
like you said, he was sending pictures of him in spandex. I'm like, he should be at least arrested by the fashion police or something. I mean, spandex, seriously?
Well, I believe he's got three young men who are suing him now.
Right.
It was originally two, but then a third one.
Last I read, I thought I saw four, but maybe
and may have increased since. I mean,
no, I don't understand. What were they suing him for? That's the part I didn't understand.
That's where I would get suspicious on whether or not the allegations are actually true if they're not criminal.
Well, they were
overextending his authority is what I heard.
Well, misuse of funds, church funds for one thing, because was giving him jewelry and clothing and international
vacations.
Right, but then shouldn't the church be bringing charges?
Shouldn't the church be suing him, not these kids?
I don't know.
I know, and
he didn't speak at all for like 3 or 4 days, and then one particular Sunday addressed his congregation, which is 25,000 members. He had 10,000 members show up in the morning early, 10,000 members show up at the second one, and he pleaded his case and saying that he was like David and Goliath, but he had 5 stones to pitch. He had a plan, and that's all he pretty much said. Lots of hugs. He has lots of celebrities, lots of sports people, lots of politicians that belong to his church, lots of money. He's a prosperity preacher.
Yeah.
And he believes Jesus wants him to be rich, and he wants everybody else to be rich.
Well,
and this guy spreads it thick.
Being one of the guys he was interested in was pretty prosperous because, like I said, he was giving them cars. He was seducing them with cars, money, clothes, jewelry, international
trips, and access to celebrities.
Right.
He would have had me at Carr.
Here's the thing, though. Are these kids suing him because they're mad that he gave them all these gifts, or because he stopped giving them these gifts and they want more from him? Because I would actually say that this guy sounds like someone I would, you know, think is awesome or anything, but he may actually be getting railroaded, basically, by a bunch of kids who are just basically out with their hands out saying, give me more.
Let's put it this way. The guys suing him, at least two of the guys, the first two individuals suing him, are currently 17 and 18 years old. So at least one of them is currently a minor.
Right.
So, which by definition is illegal. I don't know if that...
What do you mean? It's illegal to give them gifts? I mean, I know what they're – I mean,
yeah, there hasn't been any proof.
There hasn't been any proof of any type of sexual misconduct.
No, I agree.
I agree
with that. there are certainly indications that something unusual was going on.
Oh, that's no disagreeance. I guess it trips me up that it's not the actual, like, church, which I would suppose is some sort of corporate partnership or something. Has a board of usually, like, there's a board, you know, of deacons or whatever in a church, et cetera, et cetera, that aren't concerned about this, and they're the ones that are investigating rather than these three boys bringing up the charges.
Right.
That's why a lot of this is interesting. It's kind of unclear, and so it's going to be very fun to follow this and see where it unfolds, because in the beginning it seemed like sexual misbehavior to me.
Well, that's what I heard the accusations were, and he's I don't think he's even addressed that as far as I know.
He's not even
dignified it with
not at all. And so, you know, there is no proof of anything at this point right now, but it's going to be fun to watch it unfold and keep going.
I am personally going to make a prediction that he's guilty.
That's what I'm saying.
So I'm willing to do that.
You know.
But I can't. I have to admit, I mean, the legal process has to go forward, and he's found innocent.
And there's a lot that we don't know. I mean, there's a lot on both sides that we don't know.
Well, if they can prove that he was giving them cars and stuff, at the very least they can prove that there was a lot of financial misuse of funds, because these are, you know, they're supported by donations.
That also takes me back to asking, how much does this preacher actually take in with his salary? Because he lives in a
$1.1 million house.
Right. I mean, if
it's the kind of church where it's not really a church,
right,
which isn't ran by a board and all that kind of stuff, and he just has total control over the money.
I think there is a board.
Right. Yeah. But I'm just saying that, like, sometimes these cult of personalities, if you will, that's kind of the way they're ran.
Yeah.
Like, what's his face? I think Benny Hinn. But you would think that was kind of his deal, you know.
But even with a 25,000 member church, there has to be some administrative personnel just to run the place, because there's no way he could do it at all.
Right.
There has to be some oversight, or it would have just ran into the ground long.
Well, they mentioned he has not been asked to step down from the board yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the part of that I don't understand. Right. Like, if something comes up like that, you would think as investors in a company, if you will, you would all be like, okay.
I don't think Haggard was originally until it just became
It just kind of slammed him in the face, Haggard or Ted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's killing me.
It just came all down real fast, and
we got okay.
This one will be slower.
Do we have anything else on Bishop Long?
No. I think that's about it.
Although I did want to just reiterate that he is still innocent until proven guilty.
Sure.
At least in a criminal court. I'll be honest with you, I don't know what the lawsuits. I mean, what the justification for the lawsuits are, I guess...
I don't think we're going to know for a few weeks.
And until I have more information, I can't really say one way or another what I think, because you know, if they're suing him, you know, I don't know. It always makes me suspect when they're suing before they even get authorities involved and saying, this person did something to me, and then a criminal investigation doesn't go through first.
Their lawyer argued that the reason they didn't go to the authorities first is because so many of the local authorities go to that church, whether that's
I say you go to the authorities first, and if the authorities don't help you, then you go to the lawyer and you say, they're not helping me because they're covering.
we've seen this unfold in the Catholic Church too. I mean, how come some of these kids didn't go forward and say something early on, but they didn't?
Well, because I think in that situation, for a long time, nobody would have believed them.
Little kids coming up and saying the priest is touching me funny is a different thing than other kids going and saying, you know, Yeah, I don't know. I just well, back then, this is what
I think is almost every time. I mean, I don't know if this would be completely true, but anytime something like this comes ahead, it almost always is.
But you know, and also back then when a lot of that church molestation was going on, it was with people who didn't have cell phones, weren't getting obscene texts from the priest because it just the technology didn't even exist,
right?
And there really wasn't the hardcore evidence that you would need to, as an individual, make a solid case, let alone convince your parents that it was actually happening. You know,
hey, good whiskey, Howard.
Yeah, thank you. It is. I think some of this gets was a bit poisoned throughout the 80s and 90s because of like the Satanism scare in the Eastern United States and stuff like that. The stuff that was encouraged by like what do they call it, regression therapy and that sort of stuff with children, you know, where they claim that, you know, people, grown-ups were Satanists and molested them, and it was a huge huge case.
Yeah.
It got a lot of public attention, and there was a lot of scare when I was a kid in churches, you know, of like, you know, the impending threat of Satanism and all this kind of
and, well, and don't forget Dungeons and Dragons.
Right. Well, no, right, I mean, right, it was all connected, and I think a lot of that tied in with this why it was so quiet for years and years and years, because, you know, Junior comes to you and says, "Hey, you know, Pastor Johnson's been, you know, diddling me in the rectory for a while here." you know, and I think a lot of parents may have reacted to that in such a fashion as to think, you know, I don't want to do this. I mean, you know, maybe they just imagined it, or maybe they misconstrued it, or all those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a lot of hesitance to that because there had been so many people that cried wolf about these kind of situations.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, and certainly the potential for fraud is there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Especially when there's money involved.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're
I kind of question that too in the very beginning about if they're getting all this vacation, getting all this stuff, why don't they just keep their mouth shut, keep getting it? I don't know. Unless the sex is the thing. I mean,
or there's no sex at all, and they're just mad that he's not giving them stuff
more.
Anymore.
Or
but I'll be honest with you.
So it is. You know, I did think that. Like you're talking about Jennifer. You know,
but if they're able,
maybe he's got the herpes.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe that's it. Maybe there's just a lot more we don't know.
Yes,
and
I think so.
It's to come. And we'll just follow it. See what happens.
Yes. So again, innocent until proven guilty. And like I said, I was hesitant to even bring it up just because so little evidence.
But it hit the Star. I mean, of course it hit lots of papers
everywhere,
but it's had three big articles. I mean, pretty good articles on it. So
I mean, this is why religion's a problem, you know.
Right,
if you're an atheist or an agnostic celebrity and somebody accuses you of sexual transgressions, you can just go, yep.
That's the way we atheists roll.
That's me. I did that.
I'm leaving.
Yep. Sorry. Not really.
Well, it would be easier for us because we could say, well, you know, we're not opposed to homosexuality. So,
no.
Yes,
no.
I gave that hot blonde a Cadillac to have sex with me. I admit this. I'm more than willing to say that I did that thing. What do you want from me?
Depending on who the boy is.
So what? Well, let's say anybody else who's hot out there who wants to have sex with me.
I have
Cadillac.
More Cadillacs Cadillac. Where that came from.
Yeah, just all over the place around here. You sold me a Cadillac, by the way, Howard.
Oh, yes.
It wasn't that good.
he'll give you what? A compact car or some
you
sort?
Can take that, you can take that broken-down Honda Accord.
All right.
That's funny.
All right. Kind of good news coming up. The Worthington family gets jail time for its faith-healing death.
Is that in Oregon?
That was in Oregon. I think that we talked about that in a previous show.
Yeah, that was Oregon City, Oregon, wasn't it?
Very good.
Yes.
You are up.
Yeah. Actually, they've had like 20 cases in the last two decades there.
Yeah,
that
particular church, the children are dying off left and right at that church.
Yeah.
But they finally convicted someone. They finally got the evidence together. And they convicted Judge Stephen Elmar, told members of the Faith Healing Church Friday that he was sending Carl Brent Worthington to jail for, was it 2 months?
Yep, wasn't much.
Followed by 5 years of probation. But it's a start.
She had a tumor on her back of her neck the size of a softball mm-hmm. before she died.
And they prayed over it.
Yes. And friends and members. And he gets 2 months.
Yeah.
You know, but on the brighter side, I don't know if it's the bright side or not, something, one of those 20, I think it was 20, I'm not sure, it could have been 15, but people that this has happened to in Oregon City in the last couple of decades, two people did get 18 months each.
Oh, good.
I mean, that's about the longest I've heard of so far, just in my skimming around.
It's better than the nothing that people had been getting for a very long time.
Well, the people in Wisconsin, all they got was 1 month per year for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So 5 months and 5 years, that's what they got. And they got two other kids at home.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be a little concerned about that.
Well, you know, and
it sounds like given the amount of people in the congregation, if we just give it enough time, it'll just work itself out. I mean, I'm sorry.
Well, you know, I think this faith healing, you know, because that's what they are, the faith healer.
I mean, it's obviously like, not working.
Yeah, and it always amazes me. It always amazes me, despite the corpses just piling up at that particular location in Oregon City. They're still doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's all God's will.
Yep.
God's going to heal him if he wants to heal him, and let him die if he wants him to die. And you know,
I figured
that logic works both ways. You know, like if I'm just destined to die because some being wills it, right?
Right.
You know, then that's just fine. I'm going to try to cure myself any way I freaking can. And if he wants to kill me,
yeah,
nothing I
can
do.
That's fine. If they want to kill you, but not your kid, not your child.
That's the thing that actually angers me about stories like this. And like, oh, so a kid's not worth that much, apparently. Right. The death of a child is apparently not worth anything to anybody, you know, unless it's because it's at the, you know, and I don't know. It just frustrates me. I'm like, they should be protected, and people, they should give harsher penalties out for stuff like this. Because, you know, if they're over 18 and they decide they don't want to go to the doctor and they want to do the, you know, the praying over them and all that stuff for healing, great. Have at it.
Yeah,
but until they're of age and can make that decision themselves, no.
Well, and I said this on another show. If instead of faith healing, if their excuse for not getting this child medical care is we were watching football or we were watching the soap operas, if it were anything else, they're in jail for 10 years.
Yeah.
But, we prayed over them. Okay, you get 2 months. But I mean, it's just ridiculous.
But see, I that would be a good question, though, to look at those two different kinds of crimes, negligence, if you will, compared to, you know, these faith healing,
mm-hmm.
which we all would still consider to be negligence, of course. But to look at those two and see what the penalties are, because I have heard of plenty of cases where a child did die of some sort of mistake that the parent made, and the penalties are not necessarily very harsh.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for the simple fact of you have a person that made a mistake of some sort, whatever, they forgot to set the emergency brake when they got out of the car or something like that. And, you know, the child died. Many judges are more willing to be lenient merely because they have a grieving parent.
But when you're looking at a kid and praying on them for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks at a time,
and see that they are visibly in pain. I'm with you.
Yeah. And we all agree that that's horrible. Right. But is that as bad?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
No. No. No. No. Yes, hold on. Hear me out. I'm not done yet. Come on, y'all. Don't crucify me yet. All right. No. Is that as bad as, you know, willingly stabbing your child to death?
Oh, it's not
well,
as bad.
Well, that's flat out.
And we would all agree that's life in jail.
Right, right. Yes.
That's what that is.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is I don't know if there's enough legal precedence with these kinds of cases for anybody to really make a concrete judgment of what this crime deserves.
Here's the deal. I believe they've actually specifically written laws to cover these faith healing debacles. Just specifically to say, faith healing, this is not an excuse for not getting your child. You can get your child, take your child to the doctor, and pray over your child. But if you're going to opt to do only one of those things, you better take the child to the doctor. And that's my understanding is what the law says now. Whereas for a very long time, there it didn't say that. Mm-hmm. But at least in Oregon, they're very serious about making sure that deaths that were the result of just a complete failure to get the child treatment in lieu of faith healing attempts, that's illegal.
Well, and I do get what Howard's saying. I mean, yeah, there is a difference between somebody who's watching the football game and just neglects to feed their child, and a difference between parents who really care about their kid and want to see their kid survive, but for some reason are brainwashed or whatever you want to call it, and decide that the best way to do that is to sit there and pray over their kid.
I'm not even sure I'm willing. If it were me, the government, the courts wouldn't even view that as being different because,
in both cases, I think
there's
negligence. I think in both cases, the parents would be found to be criminally negligent.
Yes.
Would be like what they would be charged with. Mm-hmm. In either case, it's still not as bad as, you know, second degree, first degree murder or manslaughter or any of those. I mean, we all agree upon
that. I agree
with
that.
Yeah. Right.
So
right.
I would expect that the penalties that are put upon them, you know, like for instance, like these people are going to be on 5 years of probation, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I don't know if they were charged with a felony or not. Maybe they were. I'm not sure.
I think it was a state crime. It was under state law.
Right.
Okay.
But, I'm not sure. I don't think that's quite what it needs to be. Like, that's not a sufficient punishment to me.
Mm-hmm.
But that's pretty severe. And that's pretty severe for two law-abiding citizens that just happen to be kind of, well, ignorant and overly religious, obviously.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they're not going to go out tomorrow and, you know, hold up a liquor store and sodomize old ladies. I mean, they're obviously not a threat to the society at large, but they are definitely a threat to themselves.
Well, and to their children.
I agree completely about that. You know,
and I would actually say I don't know if these specific people have any of their children, but I would also be for removing the children and putting them into protective custody.
They do it in the beginning for those other kids. They do take them away and check things out pretty thoroughly.
And I mean, keep them that way until they have to, since they're on probation, I would assume they have to check in and be, for the rest of their lives, they have to have, or for the rest of the children's lives, they have to have, you know, family services come in once a week and make sure the kids are okay. And if they're sick, make them go to the doctor.
Some of that's being mentioned.
Yeah. I would be satsatisfied with that because then, you know.
Yeah, I'd be thrilled with that.
Yeah. Right. Because, you know, that's the people that they're a threat to at that point would be their children, the remaining children. So.
No, I agree. I mean, and like you said earlier, they can be negligent to themselves all they want. They're adults.
Right. Right. If you're an adult and you decide you don't want to go to the doctor, that's your choice, man. You do whatever you want to do. It's your life.
What I find interesting, I ask a lot of Christians a lot of questions at different times about things like this, and a lot of the Christians I ask would never do this. They would always bring their children to the doctor. But when I talk about this, how do you feel about this? Well, you know, many of them say, well, it is their belief. It's almost like they're just kind of saying, well, it's okay.
What if infanticide is your belief? Is that going to be okay to take a child you don't think looks right and throw them off a cliff?
I tell them
they're wrong. I mean,
what if flying a jet into the side of the World Trade Center is your belief?
I mean, that's not an excuse, but
it's amazing how these people, I know these people, would not do this. I know these people.
Right.
Some of them I know very well, but they still
are hesitant
umbrella.
To condemn them.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Because why? Because it's their faith. Because it is a general faith.
Well, but I think they feel it's the same thing to them when we see another person of non-belief have what they think being threatened. Now, I'm not saying that it is the same thing. I'm saying that they feel like it is. So in other words, they feel if saying that person's belief isn't okay, then suddenly there might be some aspect of their own belief that would then be under the same amount of questioning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think, honestly,
whenever it's putting a child at risk, it should be.
Yeah.
And I agree on that.
Right. Yeah.
And I think most of those people that we're talking about would agree as well, that anybody who was putting a child in that kind of harm, you know, deserves to have authority step in
right.
and do something.
Punch
them to be fair, I mean, I would say probably half the people that I've talked to about this, the Christians agree with more like what we agree with.
Sure.
There should be something done about it, mm-hmm. you know. Probation, well, whatever, checking with other kids, everything we've discussed tonight. And so in all fairness, but there's still that certain amount, yeah. you know. It's about 50-50. Of course, that's just me asking questions.
All right, let's move on to another story that I found fascinating.
Okay.
And horrifying at the same time.
I like horror.
And just another example of where religion leads to the abuse of children. Now, some of you, after I read this, might say it's a cultural thing, but I think it's a religious thing. I got this article from the San Francisco Chronicle. It's called "Afghan's Dirty Little Secret" or "Afghanistan's Dirty Little Secret."
I saw that,
and I started highlighting the parts that I would read, and then I realized I'm highlighting all of this because it's just
yeah, it looks like you're an awful lot of green there.
All right, by Joel Brinkley. I'm just going to read directly from it. Western forces fighting in southern Afghanistan had a problem. Too often, soldiers in patrol passed an older man walking hand in hand with a pretty young boy. Their behavior suggested he was not the boy's father. Then British soldiers found that young Afghan men were actually trying to touch and fondle them. Military investigator Anna Marie Crandalli, let's just go with Anna Marie, told me that the soldiers didn't understand why this was happening. All of this was so disconcerting to the defense that the Defense Department hired Anna Marie, a social scientist, to examine this mystery. Her report, entitled Pashtun Sexuality, startled not even one Afghan, but Western forces were shocked and repulsed. For centuries, Afghan men have taken boys, roughly 9 to 15 years old, as lovers. Some research suggests that half the Pashtun tribal members in Kandahar and other southern towns are bakabaz, the term for an older man with a boy lover. Literally, it means boy player. The men like to boast, and the men actually like to boast about it. Having a boy has become a custom for us. A 42-year-old man from Baghlan province told a Reuters reporter, whoever wants to show off should have a boy. And it just goes on to talk about, at one point in the article, this one guy says, you know, we never actually see women. All we see is young boys. And we're going to do something.
Flag comes up.
So anyway, I think a lot of people, apparently this is very common and not even considered unusual among the virulently anti-homosexual community. I personally think this is religiously based, but some people would say it was a cultural thing.
I mean, tonight we're talking about the survey. I mean, why do so many Christians not know much about the religion? You'd have to say that was maybe tradition or cultural, maybe. Mm-hmm. I mean, not – I don't know.
No. I think something like this was because – I mean, this happened in ancient Rome too. I'm not saying that it's right. Mm-hmm. That, you know, that adult males would take on young lovers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think it is a cultural thing. I don't think the religion probably has anything to do with it.
I do.
But where I think it's interesting and shocking in a way is that they are so vehemently against homosexuality and that this would be okay is
and there's some sort of disconnect
me.
Here.
Yeah,
I mean,
there
even,
is. Definitely.
Even if it's just a cultural thing, it's just bizarre.
Right. Yeah, right? No, totally. Right. I'm not saying it's not bizarre. I think it's totally wrong because those boys aren't old enough to, you know.
I think any time where you have a situation, a culture, regardless of size, whether it's a prison or a priesthood or whatever, whenever you put a man in a situation where, like in this situation, where you don't have access to women, they don't. There are women there, but they're all indoors, and on the rare occasions you see them, they're covered head to toe in a burqa.
All I'm going to say is guys are biologically baby-making machines.
Yes.
That's what we're built to do. Basically, unless something goes wrong with the apparatus, we're ready to go at the drop of the hat. Pretty much until we're dead.
Yeah.
Okay? So any recipe that you have where you take sex and you complicate it or take it out of the picture or you know, and I'm talking about normal sex between a man and a woman, and I'm not saying that it's not normal to have, you know, same sex, but I'm just saying normal, biological, trying to make babies kind of sex. If you take that out of the picture, guys are going to go for whatever they can get.
Whatever's left.
I think it's even more base than that, though. I think it's simply, to be perfectly honest, it's just asserting dominance. It's just men saying, hey, I'm a dude, and I'm going to assert my dominance over whoever I can assert my dominance over. And if it happens to be, you know, if
– I don't even think – but
I think the dominance ties into I'm a player. I got lots of money or lots of horses or lots of cattle or whatever the hell makes me look rich. And along with that, I've got whatever side that I'm poking that makes me look good too.
Right. It's yeah. I think a lot of it's because that's the way it was in Roman culture. It was a status symbol to have to have a young male lover meant that you were somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And usually that young male lover also was taken care of by you.
But at the same time, this culture is one that focuses intently on female modesty to the point where, like I said earlier, you don't ever see a woman unless she's your mother.
But see, what we don't know about this is how many of those men are doing this that also have wives.
They might.
And if they have wives that, you know, have to submit to them, you know, so like I said, I think it just turns – it just comes down to it's a male dominance thing. It's a status symbol thing.
Well, but I think it's also – and I do agree that a large portion of this – I think this is a cultural issue that is driven by religious restrictions, mm-hmm. if you will. Because if you're a poor family and you have a son – that happens to be an attractive boy, having that son become,
right,
you know, the object of one of these chieftains or one of these rich tribesmen is really good for you.
Yeah.
Because he's going to help him out. He's going to give him maybe an education, or at least he's going to elevate his status within the society. And possibly you're going to see windfall from that because it's your son.
Right.
And I've even read an article about these kids where they've actually said, I really hope that I can find somebody like this so I can establish myself.
Yeah.
And as twisted as that is, I mean, it's in a way, it's kind of like, you know, the pursuit of like inner city kids trying to become like the great basketball star because they believe that that's the only shot they have.
Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, it's twisted, but I'm saying like the whole thing, the whole entire thing is fueled by this fear of female genitalia, for lack of a way to put it. Because you know, these men are going to gravitate to whatever objects are available to them.
Yeah, and it's absolutely true, and you can see this in prisons and in other environments where you have straight men without a female to have sexual relations with, well, they're still going to express themselves sexually. They're just going to. It's like you said earlier, we're baby-making machines. It's got to happen. And you can try to be repressed all you want, but it's not going to go away. Whether this is – I really do suspect that religion and their bizarre, over-the-top rules regarding female modesty does – I have to believe it plays a role.
I
think it plays a role. I just – you know, I do think that it's cultural as well as, you know, tied in with religion. Because not – I don't know if this is true or not, but, you know, I'd want to know if this is the case in all strict Muslim areas. You know what I mean? Like would this happen in Saudi Arabia? Would this happen in Egypt?
There are a few places in the world that are as strict as the Pashtun regions of Pakistan and Afghanistan. Saudi Arabia would be one of them.
Right.
So it would be interesting to see if this kind of stuff is considered acceptable in Saudi Arabia. And it wouldn't shock me to find out it were, and they – I don't know. I shouldn't speculate. Only – I'm just going to finish by saying, like we said earlier, it's just amazing the total disconnect where they can they can vehemently condemn homosexuality and somehow not view this as homosexuality.
So. Whether it's cultural or religion, I mean, they're both tied together.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, each one of the cultures has a religion, and you guys have expressed about everything there is to how that religion is influenced. So it's got to be both of it. It's just got to be a combination of it.
What would be interesting to see is if they have taken their religion and figured out a way to justify this behavior through religious teachings. I mean, it happens all the time, but it would be interesting to see what that justification would be, because they have to have a justification for it somewhere.
Well, how many atheist cult? I mean, our culture. I mean, we don't hear about this often. I mean, there's not a lot of our groups going around doing things like this.
Well, to be fair, though, I mean, atheists like herding cats. You know what I mean?
Right,
I mean,
right.
Just because you're an atheist doesn't mean that you're going to think the same thing. You know, when you're talking. And I'm not saying that all religious people think the same way. Obviously, they don't, or we wouldn't have so many sects of Christianity and Islam and things like that. But at the same time, it's like they're more likely to be a more cohesive group and think the same things as opposed to atheists. I don't know. Or non-religious people.
Yeah. No, and I agree. All right. Let's move on to something that isn't exactly religious, but it's kind of more of a skepticism thing. California whooping cough outbreak may be the largest in 55 years. Apparently, there have been over 4,000 cases in the past year of whooping cough in the state of California, and 9 deaths reported this year alone. And a lot of people are blaming Jenny McCarthy for this.
Jenny McCarthy, yeah.
McCarthy, for her successful advocacy or condemnation of vaccines and basically convincing large percentages of this country that vaccines will make your child retarded. Literally. I mean, that's what they literally believe. Autistic specifically.
Autistic, which is even funnier because her child's not autistic.
Oh, it's not?
He was misdiagnosed as autistic. I can't remember what it was because I read about this. Yeah, he's not even autistic. And I can't remember what it is that he's – you know, the problem that he had, and it had nothing to do with vaccines, of course. I mean, we all knew that anyway, but.
Yeah. Well, anyway, a lot of people are blaming her. It's hard to say. They do indicate – a lot of school districts have indicated that the number of children being immunized has gone down rather significantly recently. And because, you know, it really is true. Even among the general population – just about everyone who hasn't really researched the situation. I mean, most people are a little bit wary about vaccinations. Even
I'm not.
You're not. But you research. I'm talking about the average Joe on the street who really believes just on basis his beliefs on sound bites and what little he hears there and rumor. I do believe that the fear of vaccines is pretty high in this country right now. Not solely because of Jenny McCarthy, but
well, the big thing that started it too was, I think it was around the same time as there was some doctor that came out and said that he tested a bunch of vaccines and found a correlation between autism and I can't remember which vaccines it were, and he actually came out and said I falsified my study. My study was basically he was being investigated for fraud and all this other stuff, and basically he just wanted to get his name out there and. The study was totally bogus, but people still will say, oh, but there was a study. And it's like, no, it's bogus. It's been discredited completely by the guy who did it. You know,
well,
so.
I think actually, if we're talking about the same guy, he was actually being paid to research this for a lawsuit being against pharmaceutical companies for the belief that the vaccination had cause their child to become autistic.
Well, and I think it's part of a bigger movement of this whole idea that anything that is corporate or big pharmaceutical is evil.
Or anything that's science is bad.
Mostly big pharmaceutical and big corporate. If it's from a corporation, then they're just making it to make you spend money or make you sick, so you'll have to go back to them for more medicine. It is. There's this big – I think there's a big conspiracy theory – community out there that's spreading this. It's actually unfortunately becoming pretty successful, especially with your – I mean, you're talking about people that freak out about, oh, it's got to be organically grown food. And it's like, no, there's really no difference between a tomato that you get that was grown down the street in somebody's garden and the tomato that you get from the big grower that, you know, grows in these big massive farms. There's, you know, there's really no difference nutritionally. There's you're not going to get any more harm from pesticides. I mean, it's you know – It's basically just this big hatred of corporations that's fueling it, I think, especially right now.
Well, and I also remember last winter when the people were being encouraged to get the H1N1 vaccine. Some people, some conspiracy theorists, Jim, what's his name?
Christensen.
No, Jim. Oh. The guy I debated in that bar that one time.
Yeah.
He was among them, the individuals saying that it was somehow related to an Obama attempt to take over the country. That somehow he was going to... You know, have you ever seen that South Park episode where the gnomes like steal underwear?
Yes, they steal underwear. What do you do with the underwear? We don't know.
But you make profit.
But we make profit. Yeah.
And they never seem to have that second part when they come up with these conspiracies.
Well, I think it's funny that the same people that always come up with these conspiracy theories about our government doing these things are the same people that don't want to give our government any power because they always fuck things up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, so you think that the same people that never get anything right and always screw things up are the same people that are making these complex conspiracies that span millions of people?
That's kind of what I look at when people say that stuff. I'm like, I don't give our government that much credit. Exactly. Sorry, you know, how can you?
I'm just glad I look in my mailbox and there's freaking mail there. That's
or that and I got streets Bush, to drive on.
Or that George Bush orchestrated 9/11 to destroy some documents, a handful of documents that were located.
In a tower that the planes didn't even hit.
Yeah, I know. I mean, yeah, it really is the South Park thing where that their arguments always lack that important step two. You know, yes. They always jump from step one to make profit. Oh, right. Well, that's going to be the show. Everyone, thanks for listening. Bye.
See ya.
Yeah.